I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, today's free press is doing a disservice to the First Amendment. Plus, Montana Governor Greg Gianforte talks about how his state delivered record tax cuts while ours delivered record tax hikes. And another development in that saga surrounding State Representative Tara Simmons going to a gun range and shooting a gun she voted to ban using a magazine she voted to ban. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I feel like now it should be painfully obvious why we're doing all this. It's been, what, 3.5 years since I quit my job in TV news. I'm hardly the first individual to leave legacy or mainstream media to launch an independent venture. But I've tried to express through that action what I feel like is the most urgent issue in our country and maybe the world. And it is the deterioration of the free press. The press is the most powerful entity on earth and has an enormous responsibility to the citizens at large, regardless of political party. As I say over and over, the press is really the only thing that stands in the breach, or is supposed to stand in the breach, between powerful people like the president of the United States, or like world leaders, or like governors, and the people who they're acting on behalf of. And so without a functioning free press, we don't have a free country, and we certainly don't have a country that is going to function well. And that's one of the key reasons for really everything that's going wrong in our state, in the country, or in the world, is there's no one there holding people accountable for the decisions that they're making. And so it was never really my intent, even though I'm very, very hard on legacy media, for it to just go away. I mean, we can't have the media collapse in a sense where there isn't anyone. I mean, I'd rather crappy journalists than no journalists at all. But I think the idea is that hopefully one day legacy news wakes up, whether it's because they're losing so much money or ratings or whatever it is, there's just such a backlash to what they're doing, that they improve, that they fix themselves, that they go back to some of the core tenets of what it means to be a member of the Fourth Estate and why the First Amendment protects a free press, and to really take that seriously. But the free press we have now has completely forsaken our founding fathers, the reason our founding fathers saw fit to protect it. It's completely forsaken the First Amendment and the power given to us as members of the media by that amendment. And I think about this stuff all the time. And of course, I talk about the media all the time on the show. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. I have issued a couple corrections in the last month on the show. I try to correct things when I get them wrong. I certainly have a bias. This is an opinion show. And so I'm not saying I'm the perfect epitome of what a member of the media should be, not by any stretch. But, you know, there was a couple interviews. Donald Trump did an interview with Kristen Welker over the weekend, and she was pretty hard on him. And I put out a post on social media saying, good, he's the president of the United States. My problem has never been that the media is too hard on Donald Trump, that the media is too hard, God forbid, on the president of the United States. They can be as hard on the guy as they want to be. I think that's their job. The issue I've had, especially in the last 5 years, is I've sort of red-pilled being out of legacy media. The issue I've had has been consistent, that the media is so hard on Donald Trump and Republicans, yet really has no appetite to be hard on Democrats, even in a state like Washington, where Democrats are in control of everything. Every single statewide elected leader we have is a Democrat. Democrats are dangerously close to supermajorities in Olympia. So they can push through really anything they want, completely unfettered. And so in a state like Washington, which is my primary concern, we talk about other states here and there, we talk about national politics, but it's pretty clear this is a show about Washington state politics. My criticism of the media here centers around the fact that they continue to be utterly obsessed with Donald Trump, while giving the people here who have real power and real influence a free pass. So this was painfully clear to me this morning when I went to the front page of SeattleTimes.com. And Nicole had put in a link to a story. So what we do every morning before the show is, you know, we'll sort of, Nicole will put in some things of interest and I'll put in some things of interest and we'll go through and we'll ultimately build the show, right? What's tickling our fancy on any given day? And so it includes looking at what other media outlets are doing. And so this started just because I was following a link to the Seattle Times that Nicole had put in there and the front page popped up. And the first thing, of course, that hit me is their dramatic picture of Attorney General Nick Brown with his hands crossed, saying, headline, how AG Nick Brown decides when to sue a lawless president. Brown says it comes down to a three-pronged test as he tries to shut down President Trump's executive orders aimed at dismantling federal agencies, slashing spending, and redefining what it means to be a citizen. Now, you know, I saw that, but it wasn't like, oh my God, here the Seattle Times goes again. I think this is pretty par for the course for the Seattle Times, is to do some glowing expose on whatever politician it is that's going after Donald Trump. So I saw that, but then I started to look at the stories around it. So this was the front page as it existed this morning when I looked at it, maybe around 9 a.m. So the AG Nick Brown story is bad, but then I started to look at the other stories next to it. And one thing stood out immediately was just how many stories on the front page of a local newspaper were negative stories about Donald Trump. So if you're watching the visual show, just to give you a good visualization, I put red boxes around all of them. And they're all negative, right? So you've got one that even looked like, on its face, it could be a story about something going wrong in Washington State under Democrats. The headline was, what's WA's top problem? Survey shows a new issue has emerged. And I thought, well, let me click on that. It was tariffs. That was the one story on there that could have been about something Washington State Democrats are doing wrong was actually about tariffs and what Donald Trump is doing wrong. And then it goes into Trump on immigration, Kristi Noem getting protested in South Dakota, more on Trump tariffs, Trump's beef with Mexico, Seattle-based law firm wins battle against Trump's retribution order, some hit piece on Elon Musk, and then even going after Donald Trump for not protecting endangered species. And of course, at the center of the front page, this Nick Brown story about he's such a hero, you know, for going after Donald Trump. And so, of course, that strikes me, right? Because it's the Seattle Times. It's not the Washington Post. It's not the New York Times. It's not the Wall Street Journal. It's the Seattle Times. So call me crazy, but I guess I would assume somewhere on the front page, there would be one story, any story, that sought to fulfill the core obligation of their job, which is to hold powerful people accountable. And if they're the Seattle Times and they're covering Washington State, wouldn't there be at least one story that would be holding Democrats here accountable for anything? Now, there was one I saw, the headline on there, WA hits the brakes on worst speeders, how lawmakers' actions will affect our roads, but it wasn't a piece being critical of Democrats. It was essentially a piece celebrating Democrats for what they're doing to make our roads safer, despite the fact that, you know, the same newspaper gave them a free pass when they took away the ability of police to pursue violent criminals and made our roadways more dangerous than ever before. So the entire front page, as you saw it, if you logged on in Seattle or anywhere in Washington State and you looked at it, and we wonder why Donald Trump loses here so badly. And we wonder why people continue to put into office Democrats who are making our state worse. It's because for a passive news consumer, if they go to consume news in what is still the most prominent news outlet in the state, this is what they see. They see a celebration, a heroism of an elected leader in our state, not criticism of what he's doing, but holding him up as this beacon of hope of the fight against the Trump administration, then everything from tariffs to endangered species and immigration, Trump is just bad, bad, bad. So that again reinforces the press is the most powerful entity on earth. If the Seattle Times or really any other legacy media outlet wanted to do its job, this would be reversed. Would it not? Would it not be reversed? Would there not be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 stories on the front that was looking into holding powerful people here accountable, and maybe a couple looking at Donald Trump and sure the ways that Donald Trump's policies are affecting Washington state, it would be the opposite. There is no shortage of news outlets in the United States holding Donald Trump accountable for what he's doing. As they should. I don't care. I don't want Donald Trump to be coddled. If I've ever given the impression that Donald Trump needs to be coddled, forgive me. Now, in case you think, well, Brandy probably just did some creative cropping on this. What else was on the front page? Okay, let's expand it, right? If you had kept scrolling down the front page of SeattleTimes.com, it would have been more of the same. More stories. In fact, there's first subsection on the Trump administration. Four hit pieces on Donald Trump. Right in a row. And then you go down. Trump says he's going to reopen Alcatraz prison. Doing so would be difficult and costly. What the hell does that have to do with Seattle politics or Washington state politics? It's a prison in California. In battle against transgender rights, Trump targets HUD's housing policies. A small Montana town has thrived on federal jobs. Now comes Trump's cuts. Trump, in a new interview, says he doesn't know if he backs due process rights. And then elevates some fighters against Donald Trump. Pritzker and Ocasio-Cortez, a billionaire and a former bartender, emerge as Trump resistance leaders. A couple op-eds. I stood up to RFK Jr. until security booted me. Here's why. Trump is about to steal my friend's Christmas and yours. So as I expanded to the whole front page, and yes, I blacked out what ads the Seattle Times are showing me. I don't need you to know what I'm shopping for in my free time. Not that it was anything bad. So on that whole front page, I found three stories. There's a blue box around each of them that had some sort of tie to Washington state Democrats and their policies and their politics. But they weren't hit pieces. I mentioned the first one on roadways. And then there's Washington lawmakers. Okay, more funding for $1 million a day salmon recovery program. And there's one that says the Northwest power grid can't keep up with demand. We must act. And I dove into that one and thought, well, maybe that's about how elected leaders here have leaned into this absolute grift of climate policy. And now we're screwed over for it. No, they mentioned Trump multiple times in it. There were two stories highlighted here in yellow that were critical of Democrats on the entire front page of SeattleTimes.com this morning. Two. One of them had nothing to do with Washington state Democrats. One of them, the headline, Biden aides decided against a cognitive test in early 2024, book says. Probably a piece they got from a wire service or something. So on the entire front page of the Seattle Times, the still most important and most read news entity in the entire state of Washington, there is one story critical of Washington state Democrats, and it's an opinion piece. It's an op-ed. It says, Washington's just passed budget has some troubling and costly bugs. Great. The entire page of SeattleTimes.com, you scroll to the very bottom and you look at the bottom right underneath the ads, and you would have spotted this one opinion piece, the one thing on the entire page, after a legislative session where they just pushed through an insane amount of crazy policies, including an illegal reparations law. Bob Ferguson's about to sign rent control. He's about to sign pay for striking workers as a gift to the unions. $9.5 billion in new taxes, an 8% increase in spending. And the newspaper of record has one story, an opinion piece on the entire front page talking about any of it. And you wonder why we're here. You wonder why we're doing so well. There's a reason a show like ours can exist and why it's the only, we don't even have to have another job. This is what we get to do full time. It's because enough people have noticed what I just pointed out about the legacy media and about how they pretend to be one thing while doing something completely different. And that is being a mouthpiece for the very people who they're supposed to be holding accountable. And that's all they are. And what I'd say about that one piece, one entire piece, whole front page, opinion piece from Kate Riley in the opinion section, That same editorial board member was part of the board that endorsed all of the politicians who were in charge of the budget they're now criticizing. So they keep helping put these people back in office, and then they'll throw in an occasional piece being critical of them so they can say they're fair and balanced. Now, if the Seattle Times wants to come out and just say, hey, we're going to go the way of the stranger, and we're going to be a cheerleading team for the party in power, and we're just going to be an anti-Trump publication, fine. Do what you want to do. I don't care. But you can't continue to hold yourself up as the newspaper of record where you still say, under the banner of the Seattle Times, see if it's there today. Hold on, because this just cracks me up. If I could type. They always say in the edition of the paper when you get it. Do you know what it says? Winner of Pulitzer Prizes, right? That's, they're so proud of that. When you click on it, take a look. How many Pulitzer Prizes do the Seattle Times have right now? Winner of 11 Pulitzer Prizes, independent and locally owned for more than 128 years. Good for you. Good for you. Did no one at the Seattle Times look at the front page of seattletimes.com and ask themselves, are we doing our duty to the public? Are we doing our duty to the people we serve? Are we doing justice to the First Amendment, to the Fourth Estate, to the free press, and to the fact that our founding fathers knew it was so important for us to stand in the breach against politicians and people in power? I guarantee if you showed that front page to every single employee of the Seattle Times who works in the news division, they would say yes, that they're doing their duty because they're holding Orange Man Bad accountable. And they wouldn't see any problem in the world with continuing to let off the hook the people who are in charge of our state's downfall. And that is exactly what's wrong. Any problem you have, any gripe you have, with politics in the state of Washington, with politics in the United States, is at its core the fault of the media. Truly. If you're mad about Donald Trump being in office, you don't like Donald Trump, why do you think Donald Trump was elected in the first place? I've already said I don't think Donald Trump's, when he came down the escalator at that time, his campaign shouldn't have had a chance in the world. Now, I've since voted for him. But at the time, the reason why Donald Trump's campaign took off is the media ate it up, wall to wall. Everything dumb he said and did, oh, it's on the news, great ratings, this is perfect. For the first time ever, we're going to take all these campaign speeches, unfettered, no commercials. And they turned around and like, oh my God, he got elected. Yeah, because you gave him billions of dollars worth of free advertising for a year and a half straight. And then there's a story nationally that feeds into this a little bit. So he promised to do this. He came out and he did. Donald Trump, this is an executive order from the White House, ends the taxpayer subsidization of biased media. So it said, President Donald Trump signed an executive order ending the taxpayer subsidies for National Public Radio and the Public Broadcasting Service, so NPR and PBS. So what does that look like? It says NPR and PBS receive tens of millions of dollars in taxpayer funds each year, primarily from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The order ceases federal funding to NPR and PBS to the maximum extent allowed by law. It also ceases indirect funding to PBS and NPR by prohibiting local public radio and television stations and any other recipient of CPB funds from using taxpayer dollars to support these organizations. So that happens, and you already know how I feel about that. No media entity, no news outlet should be funded by any government entity. It's completely contrary to what we're supposed to be doing. The only two exceptions I give: TVW at the state level and any similar entity across the country that does it for state houses, because it's the only way, it's a direct view into what's happening in Olympia for people who can't get down there themselves. It's an important public service that actually does hold government accountable by allowing us to see with our own eyes what they're doing and what they're saying. And then C-SPAN, which provides a similar service. You can watch what's happening in Congress, you can monitor votes and all that. Those are two very different things. I think everyone agrees on that. But the idea being that the Fourth Estate holds politicians accountable, then they should be taking no money that's been given to them and granted to them by the politicians. And we see that at the federal level, that makes no sense. At the state level, they're trying to pass tax breaks for media outlets. They're funding journalism fellows to go turn around and cover them in Olympia. how can you trust that those people are going to be able to do their jobs? Because if they're too critical and that funding goes away next year, they know that. So there's always going to be that thing in the back of their boss's mind saying, hey, that person is, you know, giving us a couple million dollars a year. Let's not be too hasty here. So I don't care if you are a far right news organization, a far left news organization. You shouldn't be getting money from any sort of government entity. And if taxpayers want to subsidize you, they can do that by consuming on their own, of their own volition, by consuming your content, by subscribing to your platform. So here's what really gets me about this, and it speaks to the core of the problem with the media these days. They think they're completely above reproach. They don't believe that they can or should be criticized. They think just the act of criticism is an attack on the First Amendment, and therefore an attack on the Constitution of the United States. Imagine feeling that way. Imagine as a news outlet or a member of the media whose job it is to be critical of other people, to talk about the failures and the shortcomings of other people, and you can accept none of that yourself. Isn't that wild? So just the act of criticizing them as bias or whatever it is, that's an attack on the First Amendment. That's what NPR believes. So Catherine Maher, who is the president and CEO of NPR, released a statement on the executive order saying this is not about balancing the federal budget. And I don't think Trump's saying it is either. A few tens of millions of dollars, that's nothing to our federal budget. He's saying what I'm saying. We shouldn't be subsidizing any sort of news outlet. She goes on to say the appropriation for public broadcasting, including NPR and PBS, represents less than 0.0001% of the federal budget. Again, it's not, I agree with her, it's not an issue of balancing the federal budget, and I'm not sure the people pushing for it say it is either, although it doesn't hurt. The president's order is an affront to the First Amendment rights of NPR and locally owned and operated stations throughout America to produce and air programming that meets the needs of their communities. Tell me, where in the First Amendment does it say the government has to subsidize a free press? You're not going to find it anywhere. So how in the world can not giving you free money taken from taxpayers be an affront to the First Amendment rights of NPR? And then she goes on to say, it's also an affront to the First Amendment rights of station listeners and donors. Okay. Now we're really stretching here. Who support independent news and information. Although federal funding is an essential aspect of public media, significant financial support comes from listeners, underwriters, and philanthropic grants. Okay, rely on them. You're already saying that mostly you do your job through philanthropic organizations, through listeners and viewers who fund your work, much like we do, through subscribers. So how is it not only an affront to your First Amendment rights to not be subsidized by the government, but it's also an affront to the First Amendment rights of your viewers and listeners and donors to not be subsidized by the government? Makes no sense in the world. Absolutely no sense in the world. And then PBS, apparently trying to prove that it's not like some bias arm of the Democratic Party and should absolutely continue to get funding, brings on one of the most left-wing talking heads. Did he lose his job with MSNBC because even he was too far left with MSNBC, or is he still MSNBC? Jonathan Caperart, maybe he is now, like an MSNBC contributor, as left-wing as it gets, as TDS anti-Trump as it gets, that's the person who they bring on PBS to make the argument that it somehow violates the First Amendment to take money away from PBS.
It is a fundamental attack on our Constitution, on the foundation of this country. People need to understand and remember, there is only one profession that is protected in the Constitution, and it is the free press. It is the press. And why? Because the founders understood that the survival of a democracy depends on an informed citizenry. And the citizenry can only be informed by a press that can report and do, you know, report on the affairs of the republic free and unfettered.
Oh, we have important work to do. We have to report on the affairs of the republic free and unfettered. It's critical, critical stuff we're doing. Let's check in on the critical work that NPR and PBS are doing, shall we? Which skin color emoji should you use? The answer can be more complex than you think. Manny loves cayenne, plus five facts about queer animals for Valentine's Day. A trans teenager and her mom reflect on Nebraska restricting gender-affirming care. Masturbation abstinence is popular online. Doctors and therapists are really worried. Etc., etc., etc. Editor's note. This story quotes the U.S. Declaration of Independence, a document that contains offensive language about Native Americans, including a racial slur. Yeah, really reporting on the affairs of the affairs of the Republic there. But again, it doesn't matter. It wouldn't matter even if PBS and NPR were doing fair and balanced journalism that I found valuable, that any of you found valuable, that the American populace, even if there was a poll done and the American populace 99.9% said yes, NPR and PBS are fair and balanced, they still don't deserve and should not want, that's critical, should not want money from the government. The government that they are supposed to be holding accountable. Which is, of course, just money taken from taxpayers to be used as the government sees fit. And as they've now done, this is exactly what they should do. NPR is now out with these ads. You'll probably see them popping up. I saw one on my Facebook timeline. Not sure why the Facebook algorithm would feed me an ad from NPR begging for money, but here we are. The public media is under threat, these ads say. Millions depend on the NPR network every day. Silencing journalism is one way to silence truth and erode the power of the people. Okay. But how are they silencing you by taking away your federal subsidies? As you're pointing out here, when I click on it, it takes me to my local KUOW KNKX where you can make a donation. And that's perfectly fine. And I'm sure that this week they will collect a ton of donations. Using that anti-Trump animus, oh, we're under attack from Donald Trump. And I'm sure they can make up the difference in the federal funds just like that. And that's exactly how it should be done. I don't care. If you want to give your money, if you want to give your life savings to NPR, by all means. But I don't want to give my money to NPR. I don't want to give my money to PBS. That's my First Amendment right, right? To not give my money to a news organization that I don't trust or believe in. But that's exactly what's happening right now, is I'm being forced by the federal government to subsidize what really are just two platforms of the left. And I have a problem with that, just as I would having my money subsidize any media outlet, right or left. And it's not an attack on the First Amendment. If you can't survive without federal funds as a news organization, you're doing something wrong. And the headlines I just pointed out are exhibit A, B, C, D, E, all the way to Z. About what you're doing wrong and why you might not be able to make it without federal funds, without forcing taxpayers to subsidize what you're doing. I firmly believe it. There is nothing that will change in the state of Washington until the media changes. Nothing. Because when you got entities like the Seattle Times that play cover for them, sprinkle in a few critical opinion pieces here and there, then turn around as that same editorial board and endorse all the people who made those bad decisions, nothing is going to change. Until the media landscape changes, either the legacy media finds a way, a miracle, a little introspection, can look in a mirror and say, we're not doing what we should be doing. We are squandering the power and the influence that we have in this country. The free press is a gift and we should be using it to be critical of Donald Trump, to be critical of Bob Ferguson, to be critical of anyone who's making decisions that impact the lives of the people who we serve. And who view our content, who listen to our content, who read our content. So absent some sort of miraculous come to Jesus moment about how far they've fallen, it's going to fall on all of you to make decisions about who you support financially, who you don't support financially, who you help by giving a click here and there, jacking up their numbers, turning on the TV, giving them a rating, a view. You have to stop it all, and people have to wake up and realize that these outlets are not serving their best interests. And when they're so far fallen financially than other entities who are up to the task, who haven't forsaken the First Amendment, can step in and fill the void. Wild stuff. Coming up next on Sundays with Subscribers, Montana Governor Greg Gianforte joined us to talk about how he delivered record tax cuts to his citizens. We'll play a clip from that interview coming up. First, if you're thinking about selling your home at some point this year, your very first call should be to Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com. And I always recommend a decision that important. You want to reach out to a few real estate agents, ask them what they have to offer you. What are you going to do for me that other real estate agents aren't? And if they can't answer that question, probably shouldn't go with them, but I know that Wes Jones can. He's going to talk to you about their Listing Boost concierge service, where they can come in, help take care of any cosmetic upgrades that might need to be made to your home to make sure it sells for top dollar. You can even pay for it at closing, which I think is a really cool service. He'll give you a free market analysis in the way that only Wes Jones can. He's been doing this for a long time. He's been through the market ups and downs. He knows what buyers want at any given moment, and he knows how to deliver it. So reach out to a few. Ask them what they can do for you. If they don't have a good answer, then send them packing and reach out to sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It is simply a better way to sell your home. They take all the stress out of the process. Well, I can't say all the stress. I think there's always going to be some stress when you sell your home. But to the extent possible, Wes Jones is going to be by your side every step of the way, trying to absorb some of the stress out of that process so that you can move on with your life. Because isn't that what selling our homes are all about? Maybe you're moving to Idaho, or maybe you're moving to Montana. And if you are, then you are paying lower taxes than ever before in that state. Because in both Idaho and Montana, the governors, while our state was delivering the largest tax increases in state history to the tune of $9.5 billion, the governor of Idaho, Brad Little, and the governor of Montana, Governor Greg Gianforte, were signing into law the largest tax cuts in their state's history. And I gotta say, it's a little bit infuriating. I mean, I'm not going to move. I'm not moving to Idaho. I'm not moving to Montana. I love both places. But to be going through this whole whirlwind of, oh my gosh, all the budget issues here, $16 billion budget deficit, $9.5 billion in new taxes, and then to see the headlines out of Idaho and Montana, it's depressing. Like, what have they figured out that we can't figure out? I guess I don't understand it. This is from Montana Free Press. Gianforte signs $278 million a year income tax measure. Republican-backed measure cuts the state's top bracket tax rate to 5.4% and extends a lower rate to more middle-income taxpayers. Governor Gianforte himself joined us on Sundays with Subscribers to talk about how they accomplished it.
Since I've come into office a little over 4 years ago, we've reduced our income tax rate three times. And we're not done because let's face it, the money belongs to the people, not government. We've been fiscally responsible. We haven't grown state spending. And there was as a result, we've been able to lower taxes every legislative session.
What do you think is the philosophical difference there? Because Washington, we're not hurting for money when it comes to our economy. You know, we've got a lot of people in the tech sector here. We've got money rolling in. But then we turn around and we're facing, even when we have no economic hardship, we're facing a $16 billion budget deficit. Then they just passed the $9.5 billion in new taxes. So we're not too far apart geographically. What do you think philosophically is the approach that allows you to cut taxes while ours grow?
Government is not the solution to every problem. There are things government has to do. I mean, you need law enforcement. There's infrastructure that has to be put, water, sewer, roads, bridges. We need to fund our schools properly. But it is not the answer to every problem. So we've made it a point in each of the legislative sessions to grow our budget significantly less than the rate of inflation. In fact, in my first 2 years, our state spending went up less than 1%. And as a result, we ended up with a multi-billion dollar surplus. We sent a check for almost $4,000 back to every Montana family in the form of rebates and reduce the long-term permanent tax rate as well. We've cut the top income tax rate by 1.5 full percentage points since I've come into office, and we're not done. I think we can do more. Adam Smith originally said the purpose of government is first make and enforce the laws, and let's keep it simple. It's like you steal my stuff, somebody has to come and take you and put you in jail. Secondly, infrastructure. Thirdly, national defense, which is mostly a federal obligation. We have an obligation in education. Milton Friedman added a fourth one. We really inherited this from the FDR administration, the Great Society last century, that a social welfare system to support people that can't take care of themselves. The problem is people want to extend that social safety net to everybody and their brother. And if everybody climbs on it, as Margaret Thatcher said, you just run out of other people's money.
Yeah.
So we've limited these services to just the people that need it, and then it'll be there for them, and it doesn't burden the hardworking people that are bringing a paycheck home every week.
Yeah, at the same time, I think Democrats might, you know, playing devil's advocate. So your state, Idaho, also did the largest income tax cut that they've had in state history. But we don't even have an income tax here. So our income tax is lower than yours, and it's lower than Idaho. It's zero. But at the same time, then they make up for it with all these regressive taxes that hurt the working class the most. So, I mean, could there be an argument made that maybe Washington should pass an income tax and we wouldn't be in such a budget crisis?
I'll give you my view. I think every tax is like a tapeworm. If you swallow a new tapeworm, it will expand to consume every available resource it can find. We don't have a sales tax in Montana. So it's just, we have a different structure, but government has to live within its means, because ultimately, as a result of our policies in reducing taxes, we have more people working than ever before. We had the second fastest wage growth in the country over the last 4 years. In fact, Montana was one of only two states in the country where wage growth exceeded inflation over the last 4 years. And it's directly related to this philosophical view that you work for it, it's your money, you should keep it.
That's part of our conversation with Montana Governor Greg Gianforte on Sundays with Subscribers. If you'd like to become a subscriber, you can sign up undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. Catch all those Sunday shows, which are exclusive to our supporters. It was a great conversation with him. You know, it's interesting to just get a sense of the differences between, you know, really, I mean, there's a lot of obvious differences. But when you're not, for instance, so obsessed with the ideological issues, when you can focus on just the core tenets of government, and we can do that here. We should be doing that here. We absolutely can be doing that here. But think of how much time this legislative session was focused on helping illegal aliens, you know, get early pardons to make it less likely that they're deported, to get help with legal services if they're facing deportation, individual, you know, stuff around transgender rights and all of this. I mean, they want to fight these ideological battles here because they don't want to focus on the bare bones of government, because it doesn't allow them to tax as much. And because I think then they have to come face to face with some of their failures on the budget front. And, you know, again, the core things that government should be concerned about: public safety, worse off than it's ever been before. Schools, worse off than they've ever been before. Transportation, I mean, all of these areas where they should be having a singular focus, they're failing. They're failing. And so leaning into these ideological issues, I think, gives them an avenue where they can still appear as champions and do-gooders while they do bad in so many other places. So it really is just a philosophical difference. But it was also interesting. I didn't realize that he was the first Republican governor in many years in Montana. And there was a point in time not too long ago where most statewide elected officials in Montana were Democrats. And so they've seen this real change where now I think of Montana, I think red, red, red. And that's just hasn't been the case. And they have some blue pockets. We talked about this too. They have some blue pockets, certainly in Montana, where some of these culture war issues pop up from time to time. But to be able to focus on just what government should be delivering, not what people want maybe from the government, has allowed them to make a tax cut there that's going to be pretty significant for their citizens. So a little bit jealous. Still not going to move there, going to continue to fight for Washington State. But it's interesting to know that it can be done. And as much as they complain about Donald Trump here and what he's doing to our budget and tariffs, clearly there's other states that are able to weather it just fine and deliver tax relief to their citizens. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Speaking of fighting for the state of Washington and to try to turn things around, that's exactly what future42.org is doing all the time. So sign up for their newsletter and be alerted to opportunities to get involved. future42.org. All right, coming up next, another update in that exclusive story we broke on the show last week about State Rep. Tara Simmons having no problem in the world going to a gun range and using a gun she voted to ban with a magazine she voted to ban. Well, there's an internal email that was obtained through PDR by someone on X. We'll give credit to them in a moment. That's really fascinating, and you must see it. First, I have encouraged you guys over and over to take the First Mark Challenge. I think this is something every family in Washington State should do. It doesn't mean that you're going to walk away from it and use First Mark Insurance as your broker, but I'll tell you what, you will learn so much from this process, and you probably will save money. I mean, a lot of people that we hear from, they end up switching to First Mark to handle all their insurance needs. They save hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year, and the central theme of all the feedback I get is, why did I not do that sooner? Yeah, I don't know. I've been telling you about it. So people are just dilly-dallying to take the First Mark Challenge, but you just have to set aside an hour of time. Would you not set aside an hour of time if it could save you thousands of dollars a year? I think all of us would. So especially if you're having your renewals come up, this is a good time, I think, because you might get that renewal notice and see that your homeowner's policy has gone up, your car insurance has gone up. So having First Mark take a look at it for you, it's almost like a second opinion for whether you need to be paying that much and whether you really have the insurance that you need. In Mike and I's case, when we did the First Mark Challenge, we were paying for insurance that we didn't need at all. And then in some other areas, we weren't paying for enough coverage. So we could have been setting ourselves up for a bad situation in the event that the unthinkable happened. So take the First Mark Challenge today, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right, State Representative Tara Simmons has been spending an awful lot of time at the gun range for someone who thinks that guns should not exist in society. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, for those who didn't see our segment on the show last week, it was an Undivided exclusive, although I have to give some credit to our friends at Outlaw Radio Network in Kitsap County because they alerted me to the existence of these pictures. So State Representative Tara Simmons, we talk about on the show a lot, very pro-criminal, maybe because she spent time in prison herself. So she posted a picture on her Facebook page of her at a gun range. And in it, she was holding what four independent gun experts tell us is probably an AR-15 with a 30-round magazine, both of which, of course, are banned for future sales in the state of Washington. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't shoot one that you already have or at a gun range if somebody already has it. She has said that this was her trainer's gun, but I thought it was quite interesting considering that she voted in 2023 to ban the very type of gun she's shooting there, in HB 1240, she was a yes vote to ban so-called assault weapons. And then in 2022, she was a yes vote to ban quote-unquote high-capacity magazines, which they deem any magazine that can hold over 10 rounds, which again, we asked four independent firearms experts to look at that photo, and they believe that is a 30-round magazine. So the gist of our story was hypocrisy overfloweth, rules for thee, not for me. And she sent us a statement, which I just want to revisit because I think it sets up the update that we have today very well. She said, it was only my second time shooting and it belonged to my trainer, referring to the gun. I don't think regular citizens need to have these forms of firearms, but it was an experience for me to feel the differences in how firearms are handled. I stand by my vote to ban these and know it will take time for them to go away as they were grandfathered in. She does say, however, I'd be open to an avenue for some citizens to have them under certain circumstances, especially after psychological evaluations. So after she's caught red-handed at a gun range, shooting a gun she voted to ban, using a magazine she voted to ban, she's saying, well, maybe I've softened a little bit. Maybe I do think that citizens should have these assault rifles under certain, her words, certain circumstances, like if they undergo a psychological evaluation, which is very interesting because our friend at Watchdog Washington on X, go follow him. I think he had to get a new account. It used to be Michael Easton, and then X, for some reason, banned him. So now he's at Watchdog Waw, a good account. He does a bunch of public records things. He immediately sent me an email that he got in a public records dump, and he'd had it, and he went back and found it after we did this story, where Representative Tara Simmons, this is in 2023, she is emailing the Speaker of the House and some of her Democratic colleagues, and she says, I am not opposed to responsible gun legislation. I want all guns gone in our society. I want all guns gone in our society. She goes on to say, I simply don't want my people to be at risk of further criminalization for innocent conduct or to have less opportunity for employment and housing. That's weird. I don't know who my people are. Who's my people? Like former felons, convicted felons, because she got her record expunged, by the way, and her firearms rights restored, which, convenient, based on a bill that she helped get passed in the legislature, also convenient. So here she is trying to give us this statement that she's softened and all this. So you're telling me that you went from not wanting any guns in our society at all to now all of a sudden taking firearms training lessons at a course to learn how to, in your words, defend yourself as a woman using a gun you just voted to ban in a magazine you just voted to ban after telling your fellow Democrats that you want all guns gone in our society? But again, I go back, Nicole, can you go to that first picture, her Facebook post? Kind of sad that single women need to learn how to protect themselves these days. So you're at the gun range to learn how to protect yourself. So you believe, obviously, that a firearm is necessary as a single woman to protect yourself. But you also are passing laws that make it harder to do so and say you want all guns gone from society, which means that single women could not use guns to protect themselves. I don't know what's going on in her head. She is all over the place. All over the place. Guns are bad. No guns in society. Oh, I guess maybe you should be able to have an assault weapon, but only if you go undergo a psychological evaluation. I don't think you should be able to use these guns, but I'm going to use these guns for self-defense. You don't need guns for self-defense, but I'm using a gun for self-defense to protect myself as a single woman. All over the place. Makes me seriously question her capability of being someone who makes laws in the state of Washington. If you're all over the place like that on an issue this important. And it also just shows to me, I bet you, because she was a felon, she got her record expunged, and she said her firearms rights were restored in 2023. So I bet you that these are the only two times that she's used a gun. And she clearly knew nothing about guns. Nothing at all. When she went to pass laws that would impact your ability to use a gun. And that's true for so many Democrats. No interest, no effort to reach out to 2A advocates, to talk to women. You would hear so many people were lined up for all these bills to talk about how they wanted to be able to protect themselves and this would hurt their ability to protect themselves. You think Democrats listen to a single one of them? No. So it just shows that you have these lawmakers who go to Olympia and they make laws that all of us have to abide by about things they have no clue in the world about. And Tara Simmons is one of them. Absolutely unbelievable. All right. Speaking of the Seattle Times failure, we got a doozy from the New York Times, but it's very similar. I mean, we see these sorts of issues in the media across the board, horrible headlines, and they will go to any length possible to protect illegal aliens in the name of their woke ideology. First, our friend Zach Abraham, this is coming up this month. Oh my God, it's May 5th. What's happening to the year? On May 22nd, Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital are going to have another one of their free webinars, and this is going to be the tariff edition. Which I think is obviously timely, but if you're freaking out over your retirement portfolio because of the tariffs, this is the webinar that you need to make time to attend of all the ones he's done. It's happening Thursday, May 22nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. So he's going to talk about the extent to which the tariffs impact your retirement portfolio, do sort of a short-term, long-term outlook, and also talk about, depending on which way Donald Trump goes, how that could change, because, of course, the tariff situation is constantly in flux. So they'll also do a longer-term outlook for all of 2025, some other things going on in the market, and a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So specifically for Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital as money managers, they specialize in managing risk. So you talk about the ups and downs in the market this year and what's going on. I mean, this is the time to look at how properly your portfolio is managed for risk, and they can help you make sense of that. So sign up for Zach's free live webinar on Thursday, May 22nd, but you can register right now, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com, and make sure to catch Doge Watch with me and Zach Abraham every week. Okay, in some national news. So I'm trying to remember the story. Oh, I remember what it was. So of course, because it was just last week, and then we played a clip from Donald Trump talking about it. The illegal immigrants, illegal aliens in Washington State, ties to Trende Aragua, who kidnapped the woman in Berrien, robbed her, brought her to the pass, shot her and left her for dead. And I had talked about it was a story broken by the post-millennial, the fact that they were illegal and they had ties to Trende Aragua, which ICE Seattle put out there publicly for everyone. Remember how the Seattle Times covered it? And there was no mention at all. In a story about kidnapping, torture, and attempted murder, no mention that they were illegal, no mention that they were suspected gang members, nothing. And I said, who's the media covering for? Are you covering for the people who aren't legally in this country, who are suspected gang members, and who are brutalizing a person who's an innocent? It's so strange. Well, this is even worse than that. This is even worse than that. So that's like a horrible crime, right? Kidnapping, torture, attempted murder. That's like as bad as it gets, what happened to that woman in Birion. Even Donald Trump talked about it. But if possible, this story is even worse, and the New York Times does the same thing. So this is the headline. Police arrest a man, they say, abused a corpse on the R train. A Brooklyn man has been charged with first-degree rape after police say he violated the body of a dead man on the R train. The man, who police identified as Felix Rojas, 44, charged with first-degree rape. I mean, doesn't get much worse than that. Violating a corpse for sexual gratification. It says the man who died had boarded the train earlier that evening. He died of natural causes. After seeing the man's immobile body, Mr. Rojas rummaged through the dead man's pockets and had sex with the body. They then say he fled the train. They go on to say Mr. Rojas did not have a criminal history and was not listed on the state sex offender registry. Angie Sofiticus, 77, who lives in a building next door to Mr. Rojas, said she recognized him as a man who worked doing maintenance on the building. She said Mr. Rojas was part of a church-going family with three children who lived on her street for several years until he moved out about a year ago. So in a very in-depth New York Times article, they refer to him only as a Brooklyn man, say his name and age, and talk to a former neighbor who characterized him as a church-going man with three children who did maintenance on the building. But of course, he's in the country illegally. And the New York Times knows that. They know it. That's the extent to which they're willing to cover up for illegal aliens to try to dismantle Donald Trump's narrative that some of them pose a danger to our communities, to try to undercut the narrative that they should be deported. To what? Just in the name of, oh, we feel bad for illegals? The guy raped a corpse. A man died of natural causes on a train. And he had sex with his body. And it's in the interest of the New York Times I'm sorry, this is grotesque, I apologize, but it's in the interest of the New York Times to not only ignore the fact that he shouldn't be in this country to begin with, but to go to great lengths to paint him as a church-going man with a family and kids. Hard worker. That's sick. That's sick stuff. And again, another example of how sorry the state of the media is in this country. Disgusting, genuinely. All right, we got to talk about this John Fetterman thing. I guess it's the theme of the show is the media sucks. Is that the theme of the show? Media sucks and the Democrats are pissing me off.
Yeah.
Left and right.
Fair analysis.
Thank you. Yeah. What were we doing pre-show? Hi, Nicole. Were we doing pre-show? Oh, I said I'm going to destroy the Seattle Times today. She said, fair.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, thanks for your feedback.
Well deserved.
Yeah, fair. So, of course, John Fetterman got the Joe Biden treatment for a long time. So Joe Biden was in clear mental decline, and John Fetterman, without a doubt, when he was running for Senate, was in a horrible state mentally because he'd had a recent, what was the brain aneurysm? I think it was.
Stroke, I believe.
Something like that. And it was very clear he was grasping for words. I mean, anyone who cared to be honest about it would have said that John Fetterman, probably when he ran for Senate, was not fit to be doing so. It's clear he's improved dramatically. And not just because all of a sudden he's coming out and, you know, defending Israel and saying what needs to be said about Hamas and Palestine. But it is very clear, any issue aside, that his mental faculties have improved significantly. But that didn't stop, you know, Democrats at the time, similar to how they did Joe Biden. Oh, Joe Biden's fine. He's sharp, sharp as a tack. And then after he stepped down, that was the right thing to do. He was clearly losing it when there was nothing else politically, you know, no reason politically for them to not be truthful. And so now what's interesting, with John Fetterman, something very different is happening. So the Democrats, of course, covered for John Fetterman during the Senate run at a time when they clearly should not have, all for the sake of politics. But now John Fetterman's staff and Democrats, now they're worried about his mental state. Gee, could it be that he's taken the side of Republicans on some things? He's not the senator who you wanted him to be. So now you're going to raise the issue of his mental acuity? It is so, so transparent. So there is a profile on John Fetterman in New York Magazine. It has a couple pictures of him. It says, John Fetterman insists he's in good health, but staffers past and present say they no longer recognize the man they once knew. Okay. We're going to go through quite a bit of this because it's shocking to me the extent to which Democrats are obviously very shameless about this. It's obviously an effort to sort of undercut him because he's not being a good, obedient Democrat, but that the press just plays into it. So they go back to the time in 2023 when he's running. It says when John Fetterman, then he was elected, when John Fetterman was released from Walter Reed Hospital in March of 2023, Adam Gentleson, then his chief of staff, was proud of his boss for seeking help for what the senator's office and his doctors had said was a case of clinical depression. But a year after his release from the hospital, Fetterman's behavior had so alarmed Gentleson that he resigned his position. In May of 2024, he wrote an urgent letter to David Williamson, the medical director of the traumatic brain injury and neuropsychiatry unit at Walter Reed. I think John is on a bad trajectory, and I'm really worried about him. He was concerned Fetterman won't be with us for much longer. Interesting. So you've got this situation where they all cover for John Fetterman when he's clearly at his lowest. Then he takes office, and it seems pretty apparent that his cognitive state is improving. Yet now this is when his staff gets worried about him. So follow along with this. So the email from the chief of staff was 1,600 words long. It came with the subject line concerns. And it contained a list of them, from the seemingly mundane, he eats fast food multiple times a day, to the scary, we do not know if he's taking his meds and his behavior frequently suggests he is not. It said he had conspiratorial thinking. For example, he claims to be the most knowledgeable source on Israel and Gaza around, but his sources are just what he reads in the news. So these are things his chief of staff is putting out there that are of concern. This is 2024. As John Fetterman is starting to speak up, you know, in aligning himself with Republicans on the issue of Israel. So literally his chief of staff is saying, as a concern about his mental health, he eats fast food too much. So like, really grasping here. When before, when it was very obvious for the world to see that he had a mental decline, oh no, he's great. So proud of him, he's doing fine. So you can see where all this is going. Many of the staffers I spoke with are angry, they are troubled, and they are sad. These were some of Fetterman's truest believers, and they now question his fitness to be a senator. They worry he may present a risk to the Democratic Party, and maybe even himself. In part because of his stance on Israel. So the piece does suggest that this stance from Fetterman isn't a surprise. I mean, he's been very pro-Israel for years, and he hadn't been necessarily as outspoken until what happened on October 7th, until the attack on Israel. So they talk in this article about his wife, who's a formerly undocumented woman from Brazil, is upset with him over his stance on Israel. It also says that Fetterman's the only Democrat to meet with Pete Hegseth and go to Mar-a-Lago. And they asked, the writer of this article asked John Fetterman about his staff turning on him, seemingly. It says, I asked him why these staffers might be disgruntled. For whatever reason, he said, there's a lot of people who just hide behind unnamed sources and articles. True. His voice was low. He barely bothered to look up. His sentences were clipped. He said, quote, I feel like there's been kind of a tone shift here. That's what the writer said to him. I feel like there's been kind of a tone shift here. He looked right at me. No, everything's great, he said, deadpan. Everything's great. I don't know what you're referencing. So this is the weirdest article. I highly recommend going to read it. It's the strangest article. So the media's in cahoots. The Democratic Party's in cahoots. They want to paint John Fetterman as some unhinged, ill-fit senator after, during the entirety of his campaign, they ignored very clear medical issues with him to try to push him through, because putting someone through who didn't have brain capacity at the time was better than a Republican. And now one of the biggest signals, they think, of him being unfit is his stance on Israel. They're like trying to suggest that his stance on Israel has something to do with his brain trauma. Absolutely, absolutely mental.
And another note, yeah.
Note, his chief of staff has a book coming out later this year. Gee, yeah. You don't think there's some sort of motivation there? Shocking, his chief of staff, writing a book about it. Got it. All right, can we play this clip quick on Trump and Alcatraz? Why not? What is Alcatraz now? It's just a tourist destination, right?
I believe so.
Is Alcatraz used for something else or just a tourist destination?
No, so of course, I don't even think it's a tour. I don't even think you can go there unless you have like a special tourism
thing. Oh, I think you can go.
I don't know. Maybe you can go buy it. I'm not sure if you can go in and like tour it anymore. I don't know. Well, I thought it was like crumbling. I thought it was real bad.
Trump thinks it's just a waste out there. I mean, it was a good idea, right? You know, put the prison on an island, put the worst of the worst there. And Trump says, maybe it's time to reopen Alcatraz.
Where did you get the idea for reopening Alcatraz?
Just an idea I've had. And I guess because the judges, so many of these radicalized judges, they want to have trials for every single, think of it, every single person that's in our country illegally, that came in illegally, that would mean millions of trials. And it's just so ridiculous what's happening. And it's long been a symbol, Alcatraz, of whatever it is. I mean, you know, it's a sad symbol, but it's a symbol of law and order. And, you know, it's got quite a history, frankly. Yeah. So I think we're going to do that, and we're looking at it right now.
This thing is an example of Trump just thinks something and he says it. There's no buffer. You know, sometimes you sit and think something, you're like, should I say that? Nothing for him. It goes right from here. Whoop. Whoop. Which, for better or worse, it is quite entertaining, isn't it? I think it would cost quite a bit of money to get Alcatraz back up and running again. I don't hate the idea in principle, but I think it would cost quite a bit of money to do that.
I like that he's like, well, they won't let me send him back to their country, so right. We'll just send him to Alcatraz.
So we need more space. That's something that Montana Governor Gianforte discussed on our show, how they're trying to open up space, like increase capacity in their jails and stuff to help house illegal aliens who ICE is trying to get out. I'm right. Like, wow, it really is just night and day. Okay, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll, shall we? I asked you guys about what's happening with Trump, NPR, PBS. So basically, what do you think the motive is? Is President Trump trying to silence NPR and PBS by stripping them of their federal funds? Nicole, is this an effort to silence them?
Well, yes, because he doesn't believe in what they're doing. You're supposed to be this, if you're going to claim to need government funds to just bring information to the people, it can't be what they are, or they can't be what they are.
Yeah.
So then you silence them. If they would like to become, you know, a TVW or a C-SPAN, then they can maybe have funding back.
Yeah. So you think he is motivated by trying to silence criticism?
Well, I mean, yes. Yes, I would say yes. But I also think that it's because, I mean, you know, there's a good case for it.
Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, you can have the motivations of, like, for instance, if they weren't biased,
right,
would he have gone after them? No.
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 That would be the purpose. That's why we originally started funding them. You're just giving people information. That's why they probably originally got those funds. Because they were supposed to be unbiased news source.
Yeah, like public access, sure. You know, good healthy cartoons for kids or whatever it is.
Right. But then it became very biased and very obvious.
But like, for instance, if they were biased towards the right, I don't think Trump would have sought to defund them. No. So there clearly is a political motivation.
They brought attention to themselves.
Yeah, there clearly is a political motivation to it. But it doesn't mean it's the wrong thing to do.
Right.
It's the right thing to do. So interesting. But 93% of you are saying you do not think this is an effort from Trump to silence criticism. Kathleen says,
really?
I think. Yeah.
They say no.
Yeah.
People.
Kathleen says, I think he's trying to unburden the taxpayers from funding slanted news stories, which is kind of a political motivation, right? But it's the right thing to do. Big Swan. No, they have identified more wasteful spending and they're putting an end to it. Are you receiving public money? The answer is no. Are any conservative programs receiving money? None should, nor should opinionated groups like NPR and PBS. Let them continue to beg for handouts from their faithful listeners, just as you do. Do I beg for handouts? We're not begging for handouts. $5 a month is not a handout for this exceptional show. But Big Swan does give me a $5 handout because I read that comment off Patreon, so I guess. All right. Shirley Hood, if they weren't biased, I'd support them, but they are. Trump is right. Adrienne, he for sure has selfish motives behind it. The same motives for going after law firms he doesn't like, and the same motives for disallowing the AP from access to the White House. He's incredibly petty and a bully, but it's probably still best that they figure out how to fund themselves. I'd like to see a transition plan worked on instead of the rug being pulled out so that NPR and PBS could make the necessary changes to their business model away from public funding. I think that's a very reasonable thought process, Adrienne. And it doesn't seem like he's going to be able to, because remember in his order he said to the extent legally allowed, because Congress controls the purse string. So when it comes to funding, there's a lot of things that Donald Trump can't just do with a swipe of his pen. He needs Congress to do it as well. So, you know, giving them a little off-ramp might not be a bad idea. Miranda, my sister. I like reading comments from my family members. I do sometimes think that even if there is a semi-valid reason, once you're on Trump's shit list, you're not coming off of it. Has anyone come off his shit list?
Vance.
Maybe Marco Rubio.
Maybe
and
Vance.
Yeah, because didn't he used to have, what was his nickname for Marco Rubio? Little Marco or something?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't it something about his height?
I think it was.
And then he was just saying that, because he said, we were going to play this insanity check, but we're not anymore. Trump came out and said he's not running in 2028 because it was just a joke. But he put out Vance's name and Marco Rubio's name as possible options. So I thought that was interesting.
Maybe lightweight, it's saying.
Little
Marco.
It was Little Marco. Yeah. Okay. JESC, he's not trying to silence anyone. Let them speak their minds on their own dime. Why should all Americans pay for something that benefits only half of them and actually damages the other half? Good point. This is about untethering a lopsided ship and making it sail the rough waters on its own like other businesses are required to do. American taxpayers have a right to be free of this financial burden, and Trump knows that. Great comment. Very true. Yeah, I mean, it's not like they disappear. Even as they've said, it accounts for a tiny, tiny portion of their overall funding. So they can make up for it. They'll probably make up for it this week with their, oh, woe is us, Donald Trump's attacking us, appeals for money. So, you know, if they were going away, if that was the only source of their funding, it might be a different conversation, but they're not going away. And I think that's important to know. I also, Nicole, I thought you would like this one. I did a little Facebook post this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Olé, Cinco de Mayo.
Right.
That's why I wore this bright shirt. I thought it reminded me of sort of the little flags that... It's kind of see-through, though, so I won't get up too high. It's got all these holes in it. Under it, so it's a little see-through, so I'm just going to hide.
Very colorful. Mm-hmm.
I asked on Facebook, I said, Happy Cinco de Mayo, best Mexican food in Washington State. Tag them, and I'll give them a shout-out on today's show. You love Mexican food. That's
I
your
do.
Jam.
That is
You
my
get
jam.
Nicole, for as skinny as she is, you get her around a bowl of chips. She's like a fat kid with cake.
It's true. But I break the chips into like four pieces so I can scoop the salsa.
And Nicole makes the best. Honestly, best Mexican food in Washington State is Nicole's breakfast burritos and her salsa, as long as she doesn't make it too spicy.
Yeah. Maybe like slamming, day one or two of it.
Slamming breakfast burritos. Okay. So I thought I'd read a few. Why not help out some local businesses for free?
You know what my favorite was that no longer exists and it's so sad to me is Mama's.
Where was that?
In Seattle, in downtown Belltown.
Okay.
Oh, it was the best. It was, I mean, you walked in there and you got this bowl of salsa and I'm sure that flies were flying around it and who knows what was in it, but I don't care.
So
it was
good.
The best Mexican food in the city. I bet there will be lots of people that will agree with me.
I don't know. We'll find out. Los Novios in Everett. My girlfriend is from Texas and she says it is the best Mexican she's ever had. I'll be honest. The worst Mexican I've ever had was at a place in El Paso, Texas, when I was covering the border like 6-7 years ago. It was the one that was like, it was like coated with yellow cheese and just heavy, heavy. I like light Mexican food.
Okay.
So I don't know what like region that's from, but that was so bad. So Los Novios in Everett, if you're looking for some Cinco de Mayo food. let's see, without a doubt, and we've tried many, El Torador in Redmond.
That's a really good one.
But
I love
closing down next month. The brothers who own it are retiring. She said, get it while you can. Literally the best we've ever had. El Torador in Redmond.
Then you get your salsa in these little, what are they called? The little crafts, but they're like mini crafts.
Craft?
like across the, you know, you get like, I don't know, lemonade or like the little jars that are usually large and you pour them out.
Yeah.
They're like mini. And that's they serve their salsa in. It's adorable.
Well, I guess they're holding
down. That's so sad. We'll have to go.
Let's see. Kevin says, we had dinner at La Isabella in Tacoma. Best Mexican food I've had in a very long time. Their guava margaritas were out of this world. So a little guava margarita tonight at La Isabella in Tacoma. I don't endorse these suggestions, okay? For all I know, it could be horrible. This is just suggestions of our...
You get food poisoning, don't complain to us.
You can't sue me. Mr. Jalapenos in Buckley. Shelly and Martin are the best, okay? Mr. Jalapenos. Okay. I want to give some locations here.
Okay.
We're doing some free advertising. Mi Pueblo in Lacey, everything is made fresh, okay? Pita's Taqueria in Enumclaw has the best burritos. Pita's Taqueria. Let's get one up north. Senor Lopez. Gotta try to, you know. Senor Lopez in Bellingham, delish, and the drinks are to die for.
I would be in trouble if my friend Miguel didn't hear me say Paso del Norte. Yeah, you've met Miguel.
Well, give that one again.
Paso del Norte in Blaine.
Okay. All right. Yep. Yeah, he would not be happy.
He would not be happy. It just reopened after a fire closed it for like 9 months, a year almost.
Up in Blaine.
Yeah. So
pay him a visit. I'll do three more. El Tapatio in Newcastle. Yum. From Carol.
That one is pretty good.
Have you been to all these?
A lot of them.
Cool. We need to have an intervention.
I love a spicy margarita.
Sol y Limon on Queen Anne. I used to live on Queen Anne. That must be a newer one. I'm not sure. Sol y Limon on Queen Anne. Mm-hmm. All right, I'll do two more. Taqueria Los Cazadores in Poulsbo. They have the best service and the best authentic Mexican food. It's family run with love and great food. Someone told me once, for the best Mexican food, go to the place Mexicans choose to eat. Yeah, that's true.
Smart.
Mm-hmm. And she says it's also affordable. Taqueria Los Cazadores in Poulsbo. All right, one more. Let's do a Stanwood one, shall we? Cocina in Stanwood.
Been there.
How are you not obese? Can we talk about how you're not obese? Tacos Tecalitlan. In Burlington. I'm sorry, I don't know how to say that word. And the best sit down is, and I agree with this one because I have been here, my friend Nancy's favorite, COA in Mount Vernon.
Okay.
So good. They have these, sorry guys, we'll move on in a second, but it's the end of the show anyway. They have these COA in Mount Vernon. They have these shrimp in this green sauce. And my friend Nancy ordered it for her birthday party at her house and they delivered it. I spilled the green sauce all over me. It's a whole other story. It's bacon wrapped shrimp and green sauce, COA in Mount Vernon. Mm-hmm. So good. Anyway, if you want more suggestions.
Oh, yeah, I know that one.
In a place near you, there are hundreds of comments on my post on Facebook.
It's over by the Safeway.
Yes, correct. So find a good place, a local business to support on this Cinco de Mayo. Well, that was fun.
That was fun.
Yeah. We found out a lot about Nicole. I kind of knew.
You pretty much knew.
But I didn't know what you were spending your salary on. Apparently it's Mexican
Whenever
food.
Whenever somebody wants to go out to lunch, I'm like, I got a place.
Yeah,
I got a place. Let's do chips and salsa.
Yep. Okay. All right. Let's get to some comments. Then we've got a great closing sanity check. Did you see that Washington State's on the radar of Glenn Beck? He had a big rant about Washington State. So we'll get to that. First, we missed a couple super chats at the end of Thursday's show. Baron with a $5 super chat from Thursday. COVID vaccine injury is proven to lower inhibitions, increase anxiety and aggression. Many studies now proving this. Too many boosters on the left. So you're saying like that's why the left's acting so crazy. And then you said Puget Pravada, King Como, Cairo, Seattle Times, pure propaganda. We are where we are in Washington largely because of the media. They need to be sued and gone. Unfortunately, you can't sue the media for being biased. Samantha Olson, do we have an update on the vote counters? I think you meant the ballot observers. What county was that?
Island
County. Mm-hmm. No, we don't, but we should check in for you update.
I
know the cases are progressing.
I feel like if it was finished, we would hear about it. So we'll check in with our people.
Cage 2202, why is Brandy anti-free press? If the stories suck and are wrong, people wouldn't read. What do you mean I'm anti-free press?
Well, I think what she's saying, you know, you're going off on the Seattle Times, but if the stories suck and people wouldn't read it, yes, but people are being secretly manipulated. That's what we're saying, is you don't even know what you're reading, right? Is so biased because you're a casual news consumer. You know, if you're one of our listeners, you might be a little bit more than a casual news consumer, and you're getting things from different sources. But if you're just reading the Times every morning, you wouldn't realize how manipulated you are by it.
Right. And I'm not saying they shouldn't exist. I'm criticizing them. And that, I said, is like the biggest problem with the media is they think they're above reproach. They think criticizing them is an attack on the First Amendment. No, criticizing them is exercising your First Amendment rights. So I'm not saying they shouldn't exist. I'm just saying they're doing a really shitty job. Luke Snyder, these Washington state Democrats will point the finger at Trump, but they won't take accountability for their overspending. Trump isn't the reason this state is being destroyed. It's the current local politicians taxing us into oblivion. Don't let the Democrats here gaslight you and blame Trump. This is their fault, 100%. And that's what the Times does. I mean, that front page today was shocking. Shocking to have that many anti-Trump stories for a local newspaper. They're a local newspaper. Especially after everything that just happened in the legislative session, you can't find some things to talk about, you know, how those policies are going to hurt people here. Wild stuff. JJ Beck, did the Seattle Times have a Biden administration section during the Biden years? I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know, but I really would. Maybe I'll look at an archive and see if they list that.
Because that was curious. The second section. Mm-hmm. It was and the top like and that. Then the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. Papa Woody, that was a good interview on Sunday. Yeah, we didn't have him for very long, but he made 20 minutes for us. And I appreciated him talking to us about just the differences between what's happening there and what's happening. I mean, they gave at one point $4,000 checks, refund checks to their citizens. Like, oh, you can have this money back. We don't need it. Can you imagine our state ever giving you money back? Oh, that's good. That's funny.
I will say I have heard read Night Wolf's comment because I have heard some of that.
Okay. Night Wolf, in Montana, I heard the cost of living is so high that many middle class have been priced out of housing and now live and work out of their vehicles. Well, a lot of people are moving to Montana.
Yeah, and I don't know if they live and work in their vehicles, but I assume maybe you'd have to if you go there and can't find a house. But I do know some people that move there and they cannot find a house. They're renting right now, and they're in retirement age, and they sold everything, and they should be able to take what they sold and take that money and buy a house. And it is very difficult to find a house in Montana right now
because there's a ton of people moving there, and so that obviously has its consequences. Like I asked him about, you know, the influx of Californians, and is he concerned that that's going to change their political makeup? And he said, well, the people who are moving here are conservatives who agree, most of them, with our way of life. So, but yeah, I mean, they're not going to be immune to, if you're a popular place where people want to move, what happens? Price cost is going to go up, right? And it's going to become a very competitive market.
Which is probably why he's able to make some cuts, because he's getting more people are moving there.
More property tax revenue, more economic input into the state. Whereas Washington State, we're going to see capital flight because people don't want to start businesses here. And then they're going to have to increase our taxes because they're not getting as much money from the businesses.
Which is what Seattle is seeing. And that's why they didn't meet their quotas.
Yeah. And there is always consequences of doing well as a state. Mm-hmm. I mean, to act as if, you know, the high rents in Seattle had nothing to do with Amazon's presence. I've never argued that. But there's a lot of other factors besides that. But of course, you have, you know, a company like Amazon bringing in people who are making $100,000, $200,000 a year to start off with. Rents go up and all of that. So there's definitely consequences to it. All right. James Apker, I was on with Glenn Beck last week about leaving Washington for Texas. What? James, send me a link to that. I want to watch that. That sounds great. All right. But that's a good note to move into sanity check. Cool. Okay, I just asked Nicole for permission for everything. So this was great. We had something else planned for Sanity Check, but then I saw somebody share this. So Glenn Beck, and this is what it's going to take, because...
Let me play the sounder first.
Let's get to our closing Sanity Check. She's like, you're going to forget. Thank you, Nicole. I knew I was forgetting something. I think this is what it's going to take, because whenever we see, you know, issues that need attention, it always takes some bigger influencer to get it on the radar of the Trump administration to start making change. Like, we'll do a story and we'll just hammer it for months, and then Libs of TikTok will pick it up. And then all of a sudden the Trump administration's like, hey, did you see this? I'm like, yeah, I did. Thanks. So maybe Glenn Beck talking about how deeply disturbing what's happening in Washington State is will help accomplish that. And I think he's talking about it in the context of, you know, if you want to act as if Democrats are going to have to go further to the middle, you know, to try to appeal to voters who ended up voting for Donald Trump or whatever it is. He said, just look at what's happening in Washington State. Democrats have no interest in going further to the middle.
If you're living in Washington State, may I just say, get the hell out now. I've said
the entire state.
The entire state. Get out of the state.
Wow.
And I'm dead serious on that. You're living in a state that has gone absolutely insane. The medical thing that they just passed in Washington State, and they passed it, and the governor has signed it. And basically it says, if there's a medical emergency, we can do whatever we want to you. Now, remember, this is the state that was talking about building like little internment camps for people who wouldn't get vaccinated last time. Okay? They were talking about that. If you think that they won't do that, you're out of your mind. You're crazy. I'm not having my kids in that state. I'm not living in that state. Are you living in that state? Because they will do it. They're telling you. After everything we went through in COVID, they're now doubling down and saying, oh, yeah, by the way, we're going to encode this into law. The new Tesla tax just passed by Democrats in Washington state. It cleared the House 52-45, supported solely by Democrats. And it's to address the state's budget deficit. Okay. Well, you know, all of these states that have been spending money like crazy, California, Washington state, I'm not bailing you out. I tell you, I will march to secede if this government is going to bail out the states that have been spending money out of control while our states have been responsible. I am not sending my tax dollars to support your state because you went under. I'm sorry, it's not a suicide pact. The Constitution is not a suicide pact. And because you are committing suicide doesn't mean my state has to commit suicide. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. We've been preaching against it. The red states have been trying to live within their means. No, I'm not cutting my own throat so you don't ever learn a lesson. So you just keep doing whatever it is you're doing. When we're all doing living in the hard way, you know what that is? That's TARP. That's the bailout of the big banks. Do you think the big banks learned a damn thing? Not one. Not one. And that is why Donald Trump has got to win. He has got to get this to win. He's got to turn this thing around and turn it around quickly. He's got to break the back of this World Economic Forum, Great Reset, Big Bank bullcrap. All these central, he's got to break the back of that and reset it to an actual economy that runs with the people, not the big banks and the big businesses.
Yeah, you hear that? Things are so bad in Washington state. If the federal government has to bail us out, Glenn Beck's going to march to secede from the union. And Nicole told me he's from Mount Vernon. I didn't know that. So maybe that's why he cares so much about the crazy happening here. But we need all the voices we can to raise awareness for the insanity in Washington state. And that's why we appreciate all of you so much. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. A big thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. And a special, super special thank you on this Cinco de Mayo to all of our paid subscribers. Why are you laughing, Nicole? You could be spending that $5 a month on tacos and instead
you're making me hungry.
You spend it on us and we sure do appreciate it.
Oh, actually, I brought us both a taco salad for today.
Oh my God. You know I love tacos. That's my favorite food.
I know.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that is so nice. And I'm so hungry too. All right. Gosh, what else? UndividedPod.com, UndividedPOD.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show for $5 and it helps make the show possible. So we appreciate all of you very much. We will see you back here same time, same place tomorrow.